From the point of view of the historian, the struggle against Rome that Wycliffe opened became very speedily a struggle of what one may call rational or layman's religion, making its appeal to the free intelligence and the free conscience in mankind against authoritative, traditional, ceremonial, and priestly religion. The ultimate tendency of this complicated struggle was to strip Christianity as bare as Islam of every vestige of ancient priestcraft, to revert to the Bible documents as authority, and to recover, if possible, the primordial teachings of Jesus. Most of its issues are still undecided among Christians to this day. Wycliffe's writings had nowhere more influence than in Bohemia. About 1396, a learned Czech, John Hus, delivered a series of lectures in the University of Prague based upon the doctrines of the great Oxford teacher. Hus became rector of the university, and his teachings roused the church to excommunicate him in 1412. This was at the time of the Great Schism, just before the Council of Constance, from 1414 to 1418, gathered to discuss the scandalous disorder of the church. We've already told how the schism was ended by the election of Martin V. The council aspired to reunite Christendom completely, but the methods by which it sought this reunion jar with our modern consciences. Wycliffe's bones were condemned to be burned. Hus was decoyed to Constance under the promise of a safe conduct, and he was then put upon his trial for heresy. He was ordered to recant certain of his opinions. He replied that he couldn't recant until he was convinced of his error. He was told that it was his duty to recant if his superiors required it of him, whether he was convinced or not. He refused to accept this view. In spite of the emperor's safe conduct, he was burnt alive in 1415, a martyr not for any specific doctrine, but for the free intelligence and free conscience of mankind. It would be impossible to put the issue between priest and antipriest more clearly than it was put at this trial of John Hus, nor to demonstrate more completely the evil spirit in priestcraft. A colleague of Hus, Jerome of Prague, was burnt in the following year. These outrages were followed by an insurrection of the Hussites in Bohemia in 1419, the first of a series of religious wars that marked the breaking up of Christendom. In 1420, the Pope, Martin V, issued a bull proclaiming a crusade for the destruction of the Wycliffites, Hussites, and all other heretics in Bohemia, and attracted by this invitation, the unemployed soldiers of fortune and all the drifting blackguardism of Europe converged upon that valiant country. They found in Bohemia, under its great leader Ziska, more hardship and less loot than crusaders were disposed to face. The Hussites were conducting their affairs upon extreme democratic lines, and the whole country was aflame with enthusiasm. The crusaders beleaguered Prague but failed to take it, and they experienced a series of reverses that ended in their retreat from Bohemia. A second crusade in 1421 was no more successful. Two other crusades failed. Then, unhappily, the Hussites fell into internal dissensions. Encouraged by this, a fifth crusade in 1431 crossed the frontier under Frederick, Margrave of Brandenburg. The army of these crusaders, according to the lowest estimates, consisted of 90,000 infantry and 40,000 horsemen. Attacking Bohemia from the west, they first laid siege to the town of Tachov, but failing to capture the strongly fortified city, they stormed the little town of Most, and here, as well as in the surrounding country, committed the most horrible atrocities on a population a large part of which was entirely innocent of any form of theology whatever. The Crusaders, advancing by slow marches, penetrated further into Bohemia till they reached the neighbourhood of the town of Domažlice, Taos. It was at 3 o'clock on August the 14th, 1431, that the Crusaders, who were encamped in the plain between Domažlice and Horsuf, Tin, received the news that the Hussites, under the leadership of Prokop the Great, were approaching. Though the Bohemians were still 4 miles off, the rattle of their war wagons and the song, "All Ye Warriors of God," which their whole host was chanting, could already be heard. The enthusiasm of the Crusaders evaporated with astounding rapidity. Liu Cao describes how the papal representative and the Duke of Saxony ascended a convenient hill to inspect the battlefield. It was, they discovered, not going to be a battlefield. The German camp was in utter confusion. Horsemen were streaming off in every direction, and the clatter of empty wagons being driven off almost drowned the sound of that terrible singing. The Crusaders were abandoning even their loot. Came a message from the Margrave of Brandenburg advising flight. There was no holding any of their troops. They were dangerous now only to their own side, and the papal representative spent an unpleasant night hiding from them in the forest. So ended the Bohemian Crusade. In 1434, civil war again broke out among the Hussites, in which the extreme and most valiant section was defeated, and in 1436 an agreement was patched up between the Council of Bâle and the moderate Hussites, in which the Bohemian Church was allowed to retain certain distinctions from the general Catholic practice, which held good until the German Reformation in the 16th century. Third, the split among the Hussites was largely due to the drift of the extremer section towards a primitive communism, which alarmed the wealthier and more influential Czech noblemen. Similar tendencies had already appeared among the English Wycliffeites. They seemed to follow naturally enough upon the doctrines of equal human brotherhood that emerge whenever there is an attempt to reach back to the fundamentals of Christianity. The development of such ideas had been greatly stimulated by a stupendous misfortune that had swept the world and laid bare the foundations of society, a pestilence of unheard-of virulence. It was called the Black Death, and it came nearer to the extirpation of mankind than any other evil has ever done. It was far more deadly than the plague of Pericles, or the plague of Marcus Aurelius, or the plague waves of the time of Justinian and Gregory the Great that paved the way for the Lombards in Italy. It arose in South Russia or Central Asia, and came by way of the Crimea and a Genoese ship to Genoa and Western Europe. It passed by Armenia to Asia Minor, Egypt and North Africa. It reached England in 1348. 2/3 of the students at Oxford died, we're told. It's estimated that between 25% of the whole population of England perished at this time. Throughout all Europe, there was as great a mortality. Hecker estimates the total as 25 million dead. It spread eastward to China, where the Chinese records say 13 million people perished. In China, the social disorganization led to a neglect of the river embankments, and as a consequence, great floods devastated the crowded agricultural lands. Never was there so clear a warning to mankind to seek knowledge and cease from bickering, to unite against the dark powers of nature. All the massacres of Hulagu and Timurlane were as nothing to this. Its ravages, says J.R. Green, were fiercest in the greater towns, where filthy and undrained streets afforded a constant haunt to leprosy and fever. In the burial ground, which the piety of Sir Walter Manny purchased for the citizens of London, a spot whose site was afterwards marked by the Charter House, more than 50,000 corpses are said to have been interred. Thousands of people perished at Norwich, while in Bristol the living were hardly able to bury the dead. But the Black Death fell on the villages almost as fiercely as on the towns. More than one half of the priests of Yorkshire are known to have perished.